and OEM. AMMM Shortwave.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, live from the studios, Republic Broadcasting Network, on this Wednesday. Jeez, it's already the 8th of October, 2008. I've got Ted Pike coming up here in a couple of minutes from the National Prayer Network. I was watching CNN for some unknown reason. Maybe I was bored. But they were discussing a case, and it was very interesting. It was around a political thing, but well, they all agreed in this country you have the right of opinion unless it may become slander or whatever. If the opposition can prove otherwise. Now, let me see. 6 million Jews died at the hand of Adolf Hitler. You challenge that in Canada, you challenge that in the United States, and you will be subject to a firestorm. In Canada or in France and Germany, you might go to jail. Ask Ernst Zundel. Just questioned the 6 million figure. But these people on CNN are saying, well, you know, I mean, unless the other side can prove their facts, then we're guaranteed that we can have an opinion. Ah, not necessarily the case. We'll have Ted Pike coming up here in just a couple of minutes, as I said. By the way, you folks down here in Texas, within driving distance, this is not quite what was considered to be a bishop's warehouse. The Mormons run these things, but from time to time they do open their doors to the public, and you can purchase grains and staple goods, a lot of different stuff, and can it right on site. It's kind of neat, actually. Y'all make an appointment and buy what you need, and then you go in there as a little cooperative, and you all work and you help each other. Package your own stuff. They have their own canners down there and everything else. Kind of a neat deal. Elder Earl and Sister Elaine Johnson, they're the directors of the San Antonio, Texas Home Storage Center. So if you would like to call these people, their address is 6880 Alamo Downs Parkway in San Antonio. You can call them on the phone at 830-438-6022. Or their fax number, 210-520-1140. If you're narcissistic, you don't like Mormons, don't go. If you want to share the workload and work with other people for long-term storage food, go do it. I have. I've been in a couple of different bishops' warehouses over the years. I remember back in 99, I was down at the Bishop's Warehouse packing up some stuff. Got to talking to some of the local folks there, and quietly the Mormon Church had told everybody back then, buy a gun and ammunition. So there it is. At any rate, again, those numbers, 830-438-6022 is the phone number. The fax number, 210-520-1140. Give them a call. They're nice people. All right, back on the other side with Ted Pike right after this. I have seen recently all over the web, well, any time that we have banking crises, anti-Semitism spikes. I'm reading this stuff, and it just makes me laugh. The true conspiracy behind international banking, yes, it was Jewish. I don't know how they're going to try to flush that down the Orwellian memory hole, but I'm sure that they'll try. And this has got nothing to do with Jewish people on the whole any more than this is an indictment against the Pope for me going after some predatory priest that's been preying on your 12-year-old choir boy child. Reverend Ted Pike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Dr. Frederick Tobin. What is the story with this guy? What happened?
Well, Dr. Frederick Tobin is a kind of a long-term, fairly well-known Holocaust reductionist. That is a person who doesn't believe a full 6 million Jews were liquidated during the so-called Holocaust. He also doesn't believe that gas chambers were the primary instrument toward that means, and he's been writing and blogging and so on for many years, but somehow the thought police in England found out he was en route to the Middle East and would be stopping in London. They grabbed him on the airliner waiting for takeoff, and now he is under arrest and possible deportation to Germany. Now, what's really bizarre about this case is that Dr. Tobin was arrested as an Australian tourist back in 1999 and sentenced to seven months in prison for the thought crime of making similar statements to people in Germany. But to my knowledge, he hasn't said much in Germany or even been there in the period following that. But what the German government now is alleging is that Dr. Tobin, through his internet presence, coming in and violating German airspace, is actually violating the German hate crimes laws against criticizing or questioning the Holocaust. And they have submitted to the European Union a warrant for his arrest. The European Union is in treaty now with the government of Britain that Britain will deliver up anybody for prosecution in Europe that the EU serves the warrant on. And so what happened is Dr. Tobin is now in custody in Britain awaiting a final hearing on the 17th of this month, little more than a week from now, in which it will be decided whether he will be taken back to Germany for a certain conviction.
Now, what is his country?
He is Australian, okay. But he was born in Germany.
Okay, so he's not from Germany. He is a citizen of Australia. He goes to England. He's on the hot list. They deport him back to Germany, and as soon as that plane hits the airspace, then he's guilty of a possible crime. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, as soon as the case is adjudicated in Germany, it'll be found out that he's guilty, but he is under arrest now for internet trespass in Germany. And, of course, this is really chilling because it means anybody who has a website or a radio program like yours, whatever, going around the world and penetrating into hate laws countries such as France and Germany and so on, can be seized according to at least inhabitants of Europe who are part of the European Union can now be seized according to an EU warrant. And this is a precedent which lovers of freedom simply cannot allow to stand.
Ted, if I have opinions that run counter to a politically correct bureaucracy, let's say, Germany, Austria, wherever, and I fly into the country, I'm going through customs, I get flagged on a computer, because of my belief system, or a website that might be downloadable in any country around the world that has internet access, I may then be arrested and jailed pending possible criminal charges? Is that what you're telling me?
That is certainly true in European Union countries. However, we have to remember that England does not as yet have a law banning questioning the Holocaust, and yet they are participating with the EU in delivering Tobin over to the hate crimes tribunals in Germany. Now, this really isn't far-fetched to say that the same thing is probably close to being true in the United States. For example, about 5 years ago, Ernst Zundel had fled Canada. He was described as a domestic terrorist because he also questioned the figures of the Holocaust. And he went down and he married a woman in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. But our customs responded to a request for his extradition from Canada He was taken to Canada against his civil liberties and rights. He was put in immediate solitary confinement for several years, then was shipped over to Germany. In fact, I just got an email yesterday from Ernst Zundel's wife, who still lives in Tennessee. Dr. Ingrid Rimland, I believe is her name, and she said that Zundel narrowly escaped being deported to Israel for crimes against the Jewish people for criticizing the numbers of the alleged Holocaust.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to unbook my tour to Jerusalem. Jeez. Ted, I laugh at this, but this is not a laughing matter, because it has gotten to the point of not even being ridiculous. This is dangerous.
Yes.
Now, I do not see, I don't see the powers that be in the world of the faith of Judaism going after people that might question, in Russia. I believe during and after World War II, weren't there some 50 million people that were jailed and eventually killed off, starved, whatever, died of disease? I hear the figure 50 million thrown around, but I'm still stuck on 6 million, which,
yes,
I am told is not an accurate figure.
Uh-huh.
What is, now, Ted, you've been dealing with this for a long time, and you can't be classified as a Holocaust denier. I guess you could be classified as being a reductionist.
Yes, I think this is basically a free speech issue, and everybody has a right to question, especially after extensive researches. They have a right to question any idea. This goes back to Socrates. This goes back to Galileo. It's part of our Western intellectual tradition. And yet there is one category of historical data which is beyond question, according to ADL, according to the World Zionist Congress, and so on, and that is the historical veracity of the sacred 6 million Jews allegedly killed during World War II. Now, obviously, maybe some person who is very friendly to this idea nevertheless comes up with the 5.5 million. According to German hate laws, he becomes a hate criminal, and if he expresses those ideas publicly, a warrant can go out, certainly in the EU countries, but even, I believe, in the United States and Canada, that person can be served up for arrest and indictment in Germany.
The state of Israel has always been run by Zionists. Is that a true statement?
Yes, it has.
Okay, so having said that, Zionism is the political arm of, and I guess it's not even really fair to say of Judaism, because Jewry is a faith. Zionism is a political offshoot. And there's a lot of people, a lot of different organizations involved in this. What I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around is that when you go against a political movement or an arm of a movement, you're somehow targeted and you're guilty. What, Ted, with many years of looking at this, what numbers have you come up with? You had to have come up with some formulation of numbers of Adolf Hitler's responsibility of the Jewish death count. What's the numbers you come up with?
Well, actually, I'm not an expert on the Holocaust. That has not been my realm of greatest study and expertise. All I know is that I do have a fairly good idea of what the Holocaust reductionists do say, and I think I can fairly represent their position. And basically, they say that in the final months of World War II, the German nation was economically exhausted, nearing military exhaustion, and food was in short supply and rationed and so on. And in these internment camps, tremendous waves of typhus and disease spread across them, emaciating, killing, starving to death, and so on. Of course, many, many hundreds of thousands and so on. And what their basic position is that when the Allies came in there, they were primed with many months and years of Zionist propaganda, wartime horror stories of butchery by the Nazis and so on. And, of course, this kind of war propaganda is common on both sides of conflicts. Certainly during World War One, it was said that Germans were eating babies and things like that.
Hold on one second. Let's pick this up exactly where we left off, Ted, because I want to flush this thing out here so people have an understanding. We're not being anti-Semitic. We're being anti-Zionist. There's a difference. We'll be back. We're back with Ted Pike. Ted, let's continue here because I want people to get a full flavor of this. Let's continue where we left off prior to the break here. So there were many deaths due to diseases. Hundreds of thousands of people died. There was a lot of camps over there. There was slave labor, I guess you can call it. You're there against your will. You're in camps. You're put to work. And there were camps there. But what we have been told over the years that Auschwitz and Dachau, there were ovens and they were running 24 hours a day. And how much truth to this?
Well, the Holocaust reductionist says, yes, there were ovens. There were crematoria, which were burning bodies as fast as they could. But this was a result very largely of the tremendous calamity in these camps as a result of disease, especially typhus and so on, which was ravaging the population, especially underfed, and overworked people. And these included not just Jews, but Poles and Gypsies and homosexuals, Russians. A lot of other people were in these camps. Now, when the Allies came on the scene, they were propagandized very deeply, prepared in their mind to conclude that there was a massive and concerted attempt to destroy the Jewish people in these camps. And all of the Holocaust reductionists that I am familiar with will heartily agree that the Nazis and Hitler hated the Jews. They would gladly be rid of them. They persecuted them in all the countries that they conquered and so on, even killing them, imprisoning them, and so on. But what the Allies jumped to and what the Jewish media in particular promoted at that time was that all of these emaciated skeletons lying in either in the mass graves, in the crematoria, lying, dying in their bunk beds and so on, were the result of a very concentrated, passionate and specific, obsessive desire of the Jewish, of the Nazis to kill all Jews in the world. And according to the reductionists, that just doesn't square with reality. And so basically, what we have here in the whole Holocaust story, according to the reductionist, is a very great exaggeration of terrible conditions, admittedly terrible conditions, admitted German and Nazi anti-Semitism of the foulest kind, admittedly probably many fiendish medical experiments and so on, things like that, conducted upon these prisoners, all of those things. It was a very ugly situation compounded by the economic and military exhaustion of the German Reich. But it doesn't, according to people like Tobin and Zundel and Germar Rudolph and so on, who have done very extensive research in this subject, it doesn't prove that there was the kind of massive numbers of Jewish dead that the Zionist propaganda machine claims. And I think, just harking back to World War One, American propaganda beat the drums, even in World War One, that the Huns were killing babies and eating them and making lampshades out of their skins and all kinds of this stuff. That is par for the course in any kind of war. In any kind of war, whether we're talking First World War, Second World War, Civil War, any war in history, it is necessary to bang the drums of propaganda and get not only the people, but especially soldiers so angry that they'll go out and kill people like animals. That is necessary for supremacy and conquest. But after these wars are over, the dust settles, people's emotions calm down. Usually, war propaganda has a tendency to fade away. Not so after the Second World War, because the Zionists were determined to make the most propaganda out of this as possible, and so we see the emergence of a vast and a continuing Holocaust industry from 1940, actually about 1944 or 43, right to the present time, and with these evil Jewish leadership in control of our media, Hollywood, the motion pictures, and print media of America and the world, much of the Western world, they have a free hand to mythologize, to create, fabricate this into something far beyond what it actually was. That is the opinion of the Holocaust reductionists.
Now, there was a time in this country during World War II and post-World War II, I believe there was a congressman that went after Hollywood, and it's always been reported that it was the Red List. They wanted the communist out of Hollywood. They wanted him out of the movie making business, out of the propaganda business. And Ted, let's define this, because as I read history, I see that the root of communism actually has its roots not in Judaism, but Zionism. Is that a fair assessment?
I would say that coming out of the Jewish Kabbalah, the ambition to take over the world by subversion of Christian civilization is rooted deeply in Kabbalistic and Talmudic Judaism.
All right, hold that thought. We'll take some calls as well this hour. 800-313-9443. My guest today, the Reverend Ted Pike. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
We're back with Reverend Ted Pike. What are the... I don't want to call them revisionist, but reductionist. I guess that's a fair word, because when we think of history revisionism, we think of taking true history and then subverting it for political or other purposes. What do the reductionists say that the true number of Jews that died at the hands of the Nazis during World War II?
Well, I think that varies with every reductionist. They all have their own.
Give me an average.
Well, I think some of them say less than a million. Some might say more than a million. It certainly was a Holocaust, but all of Europe was a Holocaust in some way during that period.
Well,
Russia,
wait a minute. Here in the United States, with going after Saddam Hussein and that evil axis we are responsible, directly responsible, those and our coalition forces, which didn't amount to a hill of beans, just trying to sell the community blackmailers out there, the global community. I think it's pretty well been established there's been over a million dead Iraqis.
Uh-huh.
So I guess depending on your political vantage point, bad guys are a matter of who? The ADL? I'm having a hard time getting my mind wrapped around this.
Yeah, well, In very simple terms, the whole purpose and the whole importance of the so-called Holocaust to the Zionist movement is that it attempts, through the 6 million figure, to demonstrate that the Jewish people have suffered excessively above all other races and religions and groups of people in world history. Therefore, Judaism, matters Jewish, and especially the State of Israel should be given very lavish, deferential treatment to atone of the sins, especially of Germany and the European peoples against the Jewish people. So you see, what happened during the Second World War became a springboard, a propaganda springboard, to give Israel and Zionism and Judaism and so on a free ride, freedom from criticism, for the next 60 years, you see, and they have played that to the hilt. They continue to play that. Now, obviously, everybody who has any perception or knowledge of world history knows that there have been vastly greater quote-unquote holocausts during the 20th century. Some such as Solzhenitsyn and others have claimed that there's up to 110 million Gentiles, largely Christians, killed in Russia, Soviet Russia, under Jewish Bolshevism and communism. And then some also claim there's many as 40, 45 million killed in China under communism, you see, and add Southeast Asia, add Cuba, and so on. Now, obviously, there's the Armenian massacres of 1.5 million or so in Turkey at the beginning of the 20th century. There have been many Holocausts in the 20th century, but what the Zionists want to do is to say that Jews, above all other races of people and religions, have been uniquely persecuted, largely by Christian-oriented nations, Western nations, such as Germany. And they are quick to say that Germany was the child, the offspring of Reformation, Martin Luther, Protestant thinking, which goes back, straight back to the New Testament, claiming that the Jews were Christ killers for crucifying, having Jesus Christ crucified, and so on. So the whole purpose of all this propaganda about the Holocaust is to drive in to our consciences and our subconsciouses that we are guilty, we are complicit by being Christians with the sufferings of Jews over the ages. And one thing I do want to say today before we're done is that this European Union warrant against Tobin was twofold. Number one, it was that he questioned the numbers of the Holocaust, but the second part of this indictment was that Tobin was anti-Semitic. Now, this is the first time that I know of that any kind of a warrant has been put out for someone for anti-Semitism. And we know that the whole term is so politicized that nobody really knows what it means anymore, and certainly ADL and even certain dictionaries now are calling it anti-Semitism is simply criticism of the Jews or Judaism or matters Jewish. But this is very threatening to us because our own department of the Office of Global Anti-Semitism, now in our U.S. State Department, which is run by ADL, says that Christians who believe the New Testament account that the Jews did have Christ crucified are classic anti-Semites. That's in the 2008 report to Congress by the U.S. State Department's Office on Global Anti-Semitism. You see, what that's doing is it's putting a huge noose around tens of millions of Christians. Now, our government is now saying that tens of millions of evangelical Christians who believe the New Testament is true are now anti-Semites.
Peter in New York. Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Hi.
Pike, Mr. Stadmiller.
Yes.
As a historian, I like to think of myself as a historian. I like to lean on history for lessons. I'll try to make this as simple as possible. Israel is the prototype for the brave new world. I think that there is a global elite. They are comprised of an old European aristocracy and the Anglo-American aristocracy. They are sort of like the masters. If you think of the plantation society of pre-Civil War America, they are the masters, that global elite. The Israelis, the Zionists, are the house slaves, and the rest of us are the field slaves. As field slaves, we are only dealing with these Israeli Zionists who are the house slaves, who are very well trained. They're sort of a technocratic elite to us, and they do all the dirty work for the global elite masters.
And who would you describe, Peter, as being the global elite masters?
Well, all right, that's a dip, because I think they like to remain in the shadows. From history, I could only surmise that they are those old European royalty aristocracy, and they have played off of one another. You know, the various royal houses of Europe have played off wars against one another to reduce the populations, and periodically they've used Jews as instruments of their own, they're sort of a middle class elite, and then conversely they turn the population, the peasantry, against the Jews, like what happened in Germany.
Ted, your response to that?
Peter, I'm finding your documentation for this European royal conspiracy and so on is pretty shadowy. It's pretty vague. And what I'd like to say is that as I look through the record of the last 2,000 years, I find a very conspicuously Judaic motivation and energy behind world revolution. And when we go to the Jewish Kabbalah, which is the five volumes of the Zohar, we find again and again and again the idea that the Jews are the master race. They are the Shekinah glory of God in this world. They are meant to rule the nations, and they are entitled. In fact, they are obligated to overthrow existing Gentile and Christian authority in order to realize their ultimate dream, which is mastery over the nations under their Messiah or false Antichrist. And as we read great historians like Nesta Webster and others, whom Winston Churchill praised very publicly, we find a conspiracy largely emerging in the 18th century, in the decades before the French Revolution in 1789-92, in which we find Kabbalistic Jews, Orthodox but Kabbalistic Kabbalah-following Jews in the Western nations like Cagliostro, Saint Germain, Falk, and others of those, along with probably Adam Weishaupt, who may have been Jewish, uniting with the Jewish Kabbalists from the East, such as Frank and his Shabbateans and so on, and becoming the real practical and even largely visible machinations behind revolutions in Europe during especially the 19th century. All the Jewish encyclopedias are very, very proud, very vocal in claiming that all of the revolutions of the 19th century, 1829, 1848, 1870, and so on, were all directed and largely orchestrated by Jews. And, of course, this all comes to the great climax in the 20th century with the overwhelming participation of Jewish international finance and revolutionary zeal in overthrowing the Tsar by the Jews in the Bolshevik Revolution. We also find the Jewish Encyclopedia is very, very proudly claiming that Jews are the masterminds of socialism and liberalism in the 20th century, particularly through FDR and the New Deal, which continues to this present hour. In fact, just very recently, in the last year, a poll, an AP poll, found that 87% of the American Jewish community voted to put in the largely pro-homosexual Democrats into the House of Representatives in Congress, you see. So there's in contrast to your claims about the shadowy monarchical conspiracy coming out of largely Gentile Europe, what I see is an overwhelming, again and again, the Talmud, the Kabbalah, and the events of history show that even though these Jews used the Goyim through masonry, nevertheless, some of these other conspiracies you're talking about, they are the tentacles. Masonry, etc., are the tentacles, but the real eye of this octopus is a Talmudic, Pharisaic conspiracy going all the way back to the time of Jesus.
Ted, I have done a lot of research and study myself, and you and I have not conversed on any extent offline or off air on this subject. And I find it rather fascinating that I would agree with what you just said. And this comes from independent. You know, I'm not on the phone and you guiding me to my opinion. This is what I've discovered through my own research. I am looking at right now, Ted, the Jewish international banksters, and I call them the gangster banksters, the usury, the same money changers that Jesus Christ got angry with in the temple, one of the few recorded times that Christ got physically upset and angered, was during a little trip to a bazaar to watch the goings-on and the money changers or the thieves.
Yes.
And, Ted, I will never back off of this. I don't care if the ADL, the ACLU, if you do a web search on my name, the only thing they come up with on me is my association with the militias back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. They won't come after me as being anti-Semitic because they know that I can see. They know that I know the difference between Judaism, true Judaism, or the more orthodox or refined Judaism, Old Testament, call it what you will, not to Kabbalah, not to Talmud, but they know that I am strictly, absolutely, 100% against Zionism, the political movement, if you will. But my research indicates, and I've read for 15 years on this, that the very conspirators, and I'll use that term, that are getting ready to take lock, stock, and barrel possession of this country are the very same globalists or the Illuminists that have this quest and this thirst for world domination through their little mechanism known as the New World Order.
Yeah.
Some people call it global trade or, you know, a union between countries or any other euphemistic claptrap that they come up with. It's the global order driven by the bankers,
yes.
Plain and simple.
Right. And, you know, sometimes I tune in to alternative talk radio and I hear people saying that the Pope and the Catholic Church
the Jesuits are up to it, yeah.
Yeah, or there's some kind of British Israel.
Now, that's Eric John Felt spreading that around.
Yeah,
he's been doing it for years.
It's really disinformation, and I'm not pointing any accusing finger at these people, but I do know that it is in the interest of the ADL and these Jewish activists to create confusion and distraction away from the central, as I say, the central eye of this octopus, and that's why I and my niece Harmony Grant on our many email alerts we send out from truthtellers.org, we concentrate on going after the ADL. Yes, there may be shadowy rabbinical sources behind that, and there is a new Sanhedrin being formed in Israel right now. There may be arcane, esoteric forces behind that, but for all practical purposes, ADL, Bnei B'rith International, is the effective frontline assault forces against Christian civilization today, and that can just be proved through innumerable ways that we do at Truth Tellers.
Let's continue with the calls. I have loaded lines here. You might have to stick around to the next hour.
Okay. Happy to do it.
All right. John in Michigan. Hello, John.
Good afternoon, John and Pastor or Psych. I have 2 points to get across. I there's this great tape set that I got from a gentleman that you know, John, Jeffrey Bennett.
Yes.
And it's called the Cast a Giant Shadow, which discusses the Khazars and also discusses the events that took place during the wars, there was a deal made in England with the Zionists to go stir up a mess in Germany, and then they would get rewarded with Israel. I don't know how many of the facts on it. I haven't heard in a while, so I can't go back on it. But it's a great set of history that Jeffrey presents through that Cast a Giant Shadow. And I also would like to bring into play the Rothschild family and how they took over the media and what their influence is, because they also have taken over the royalty families too, I believe.
Yes, they have.
Through the financing, and that their influence on both sides of the wars was very much there and present. And that is an example of how evil this is and how controlled this is.
John, I thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And in this country, folks, there are some folks that don't want to talk about these issues because they feel it'll bring excessive heat down on them and that it'll somehow mess up or detract from their mission or their goal. And I don't know any other way to say this, Reverend Pike, that we are so close to, right now, just losing this country, the self-determination, losing the republic. We are a whisper away from it. And the only thing that I see is the stamp of the almighty Federal Reserve dollar. It's 12 member banks operating inside this country. We are a whisper away from losing this country forever. And I watched Ben Shalom Bernanke pull this thing off without any debate. It's an emergency. You're not going to get your retirement funds. My gosh, we're going to go into depression, whatever, if you don't do this now. This is what's transpired over the last couple of weeks.
What?
Back in May, a guy by the name of Norman Finkelstein, he was arrested in Israel. He was denied entry into the country, and they promptly arrested him at the airport. And he's an American academic. He was ordered, deported from Israel. He arrived in Tel Aviv on his way to the occupied territories, in other words, Palestine. And he was immediately detained and told he was banned from Israel for 10 years. Now, folks, and let me tell you something. He is not a Holocaust denier. Finkelstein, who is obviously Jewish, and the son of Holocaust survivors, he's written books just being critical of Israeli policies in regards to the Palestinian territories and the treatment of Palestinians, and what he called an exploitation of the Jewish tragedy during World War II. The Holocaust industry, ladies and gentlemen. Here's a man that he obviously is a self-hating Jew. Dave in Massachusetts. Hello, Dave.
Oh, hi, Mr. Scott Miller. Hi, Reverend Pike.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, you know what? One of the main issues, the points of contention between the Holocaust lobby and the revisionists or the reductionists, hasn't been mentioned. And it's actually, I think it's even more controversial than actually the numbers. And that's the very question of the very existence of gas chambers, as in gas chambers in Auschwitz and so on. I know a lot of the revisionists, they don't deny the Holocaust, but they do deny the gas chambers.
Yes, there certainly were delousing chambers with the poisonous gas which were used to get rid of the lice which were carrying the typhus epidemic and so on. Of course, these people also say that the actual creation of bona fide gas chambers was a carpentry project, largely a manufacture of the Soviets after the war for the purpose of PR and tourism into some of those camps. And again, this is not my specialty. I do know what they are saying, and I believe that even though I haven't researched extensively, I have to affirm they have a right to say these kinds of things. Every other possible sentiment, legitimate or perverse, is allowed on the airwaves in the media throughout the world. Why not let these people at least bring their point of view and the objects or the fruits of their research to the public awareness?
Yeah, because, in other words, if they deny the gas chambers, no matter how many people they say died of typhus and everything, they're still smeared as being Holocaust deniers just because they deny the gas chambers, you know?
Yeah.
I know, I followed Ernst Sundell for years. I received his power letter every month. But in Canada, the judge actually had to rule against Ernst Sundell that truth is no defense.
Yeah.
In other words, everything Ernst was teaching and everything was so truthful, the judge finally had to rule that truth is no defense. And he says it still hurts the feelings of the Jewish people. It still hurts the feelings and offends a particular identifiable group.
Yeah, truth has nothing to do with justice, only the law. Thanks, Dave, for your call. The Reverend's going to stick around for a little bit into the next hour. We'll continue to take your calls at 800-313-9443. Everybody wants to throw their arms up over the New World Order, the evil ones that want to control and manipulate and drive us into the ground. Well, I'm just simply asking you to do the Connect the Dot program. Find out who these globalists are, the people that have funded it, and you will find your answer. Be in denial if you want, and that ain't a river in Egypt. We'll take the break. We'll be right back. Second hour of the National Intel Report. And we'll speak of these issues while we're still free. Thank you very much.